Welcome to episode 154 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read One Piece by Eiichiro Oda. And now, the cast begins.
Welcome to another pirated episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
Oh, it's like riding a bicycle. We haven't recorded in a month, and just right back into it. All right. So this week, we're kicking off our manga redux, manga part two series. I don't know. We did manga before, and we're doing more now. And the first one we're reading right now is One Piece. The first trade is called Romance Dawn. Collects the first 8 chapters of One Piece by... Is it Eiichiro or Eiichiro?
It's E-I-I.
Well,
so it's Eiichiro. Because okay. The E in Japanese makes the E sound.
So it's Eiichiro Oda.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's like a long E. The I makes an E sound, so it's like a long E.
Okay.
Eiichiro Oda.
All right. So, but as far as I can tell, everybody just calls him Oda. So I'm down with that. I'm just going to call him Oda.
Okay.
But so as a preface, this manga has been going on for like fucking ever, right?
So I have the Shonen Jump US translation.
Yeah.
And so it looks like One Piece, the manga started in 97.
Jesus. That is wonderfully long running. And the anime has been running a really long time too, right?
I think 2001.
It's like
12 years ongoing. Yeah.
And this is the first time I've actually sat down and read, well, this is the second time I've read this volume, because I have a copy of One Piece Volume 1, because somebody got me this Shonen Jump box set, and it comes with, like, 6 different mangas in it. The Volume 1s are, like, 6 different mangas, and I have One Piece is in that mix. But, me and you as well, Andy, right, are completely caught up on the anime.
Yeah, all 100 or 620 episodes or so.
Yeah, it's in the 600s.
That's the reaction I usually get when I tell people how many episodes is the, oh my god.
But this show, you know, I'm sure people, probably a lot of our listeners are probably around our age, so many of you probably grew up watching Dragon Ball Z on TV, because there was the American dub. That was actually pretty good. I enjoyed it when I was a kid. And that show, I think Dragon Ball Z had a total of 210-ish episodes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Dragon Ball Z, I'd say, had some up and downs in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
One Piece keeps... It outdoes itself with, like, the villain that Luffy faces. But it doesn't get... It like, makes sense. Like, it doesn't feel like... what am I trying to say?
There's never an episode that's just a dude standing there screaming the entire time, powering up. So, like, David sold me on One Piece by telling me it was an anime that didn't have any filler. And it doesn't have, like, filler episodes. It has filler arcs. So there's, like, arcs that aren't really part of the story that you can skip and it wouldn't matter at all. But... during that arc, it's still entertaining and things happen. It's not like in DBZ where they're standing there shouting, powering up for an entire half an hour. Or like fucking Goku and his goddamn spirit bomb. I swear to God, I fucking hate that thing.
Or like another good example is Naruto has a ton of filler episodes where it like they'll be in the middle of a war. Like all the ninja nations team up to fight a war against some super huge villain. And all of a sudden, they'll have, like, 5 or 6 episodes where there are flashbacks to when Naruto was, like, 10. And you're like, what the hell? I thought there's supposed to be a war going on. And so One Piece never has stuff like that. Well, there's filler arcs, but they move the story along.
Yeah, and I don't want to oversell it. I got all the way caught up, and now I'm having my friend Alex, who's big into Japanese culture. He's never watched One Piece. He knows all about it, though. I'm having him watch it with me from the beginning. So rewatching it, like, in the beginning, there are some things that are really slow. Like Nami's backstory takes an entire episode longer than it probably should. So yeah. I don't want to oversell, but at the same time, this is by far one of the best, like, shonen kind of animes just, like, that I've seen.
Yeah. It's not perfect. Like Andy said, there are some things that probably take longer than they should. But the action keeps going. There's no one standing around.
Yeah,
stuff that's is important. Always happening.
Yeah. But that said, I'm all cut up, and I'm watching the anime the second time around, and this is the very first time I've ever sat down with the manga. And it's weird in the ways that it's different, and it's not. But, like, so, has this been running especially long for a manga? I don't have any kind of concept for how long manga tends to run.
This is especially long.
Okay.
I mean, okay, so Ranma, for instance, is known as, which is next week's comic, by the way, is known as being pretty long. It's like 39 collected volumes,
mm-hmm.
and it took 13 years to publish in English. And that's long. I think One Piece is even longer.
Yeah, I think so.
So this is like crazy long.
And Oda has come out and said that he's not just dragging it on. He said that there is a plan. He has the entire story from beginning to end in his head. And he says we're about halfway through.
Whoa, okay.
So apparently he's planning on doing this for like another 10 fucking years. So if you want something to read for like the next couple of years, even if you binge on it, this is perfect. I binged on One Piece and it took me a year and a half to catch up to episode like 600 something.
All right, so I just Googled longest running manga series.
Yeah.
And so One Piece has been going since 97, and it is currently the 28th longest running manga.
Okay.
So
it has 72 volumes.
It is very long running, but it's not yet at the top.
Yeah, but it has, where did it go? Sorry, I lost it. It has 72 volumes. The longest running manga has 187. So if he's halfway done, he'll get pretty close to the top. He'll be like 150 volumes, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So for comparison, what are like the longest running Western comics? Do you guys know it all?
Continue with series?
What about like Archie? Archie's been going on since like the fucking 20s, right?
Well, but Archie's not like an ongoing story.
And it's not one guy having written it all either.
Right. I think it's hard to compare because you could say like before the New 52, how many issues did like Action Comics have? It had like close to 1,000, right?
Yeah, some shit like that.
But that had different creators, and it was monthly, and all that kind of stuff, you know? So I don't think it's a fair comparison.
Yeah, and there's all the renumberings that happen in Western comics.
So volume one of what's considered volume one of Action Comics ran from June 1938 to October 2011. And it was 906... individual issues plus 13 annuals.
Oh, fucking New 52, we could almost be to issue 1,000. How fucking sick would that be?
So volume two is started in November 2011, so obviously it was New 52 version.
Yeah, but you're right, it's a hard comparison to make, because even though that comic has been quote-unquote ongoing since then, it's not, like you say, it's not one cohesive story. They change artists, they change writers, they change the character's direction constantly. Like, I think, technically speaking, from the beginning to 2011, I think there's three different versions of Superman that are technically the lead for that.
Yeah,
probably. Like, in the beginning, the Superman, when it started, ended up being the Earth 2 Superman, and the Earth 1 Superman came in after Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I don't know where Electric Blue Boogaloo Superman fits in there.
Well, he was in the JLA comic, the Grant Morrison JLA.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he was in... Yeah, I'm not sure if he was a character that came out in...
In action anywhere.
In action, yeah.
So it's hard to... You can't... It's not...
Yeah,
it's
I not don't
apples
think,
to apples.
No.
So why... Okay. So why has this one been running so long? What did you guys think of this in terms of enjoying it? Does it seem like a good setup for a story? Obviously, David and I like it, so go ahead and you can jump in there, Jen.
I think it's a good setup. Like, I felt like it was actually pretty good exposition, and it laid out the tone and, like, the idea really well. Because, like, even in the first chapter, it was really clear what the plot of this was going to be. There was no, you know, messing around with that. On the other hand, I'm not sure that it was necessarily, like, engaging enough for me, knowing how much is coming, to want to, like, try to catch up.
Well, see, I think that's a good point, saying trying to catch up, because these volumes that we get here in the U.S. are not necessarily the way people consume them in Japan, right? Because One Piece is published in Shonen Jump, so people get like I'm not sure exactly how Shonen Jump publishes it. I think it's like a chapter at a time.
Yeah, it's weekly too, right?
Yeah, and so One Piece is weekly. So a chapter is like 20 pages.
Yeah, it's really small and digestible.
So people are just, you know, you go to the convenience store and you get your copy, your weekly copy of Shonen Jump, and then you read it on the train or something, you know. They're not necessarily, I mean, knowing, if you wanted to get into it now, it's a bit of a, it seems insurmountable because there's so many. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of like, it's doable. You can read it at whatever pace you want, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you talk about, like, to get into it, and there's a big barrier to entry, but not even barrier, just, like, how intimidating it can be. It's the same reason in Western comics why they renumber stuff, why they renumbered Wonder Woman at number one before the New 52. I remember there's a big controversy. It was, like, Wonder Woman was, like, in the 580s or 590s, and they just decided that they wanted to start over at number one because they thought people weren't reading Wonder Woman, because it's like, oh, if I want to read Wonder Woman, I have 600 issues to read before I catch up. And so they just went with renumbering at number one, hoping people would jump in. And in Western comics, it tends to be true that people buy number ones, and they do look at it as a, okay, this is a number one. This is the beginning of a story. I can start reading here. Mm-hmm. But then there was the big thing, well, why are you disenfranchising Wonder Woman when Action Comics is on issue like 800 and something?
Yeah.
So there was that whole debate, but that's something we do here to fix that problem. But, I mean, you're right, David, like over there, that's not really how you consume it. And for this story, all intents and purposes, you probably could jump in like halfway through and just enjoy it just as much as if you started from the beginning. Like if you started out at the beginning of, say, the War of the Best.
That would actually be a good place to start, yeah.
You know, or like even like the fucking Fishman thing. You might not get all the references for stuff, but you could pick a place to just kind of jump in and kind of roll with it. It's a little bit easier to jump in.
So you don't think you'd be like just missing out on too much?
I think you'd be missing out on some really, really good stories. But in terms of character background, everybody... So this is, okay, this is the kind of thing about this story, and about Luffy, too. Luffy has one goal, and his entire being is driving him towards that one goal. And he says in here, like, I'm willing to die for my dream, and I don't give a shit about anything else. Like, his entire being is wrapped up in that one goal, and he cares almost about nothing else. And the first person he recruits is similarly single-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Zoro has one goal in his entire life, and everything else... fucking whatever, but his goal is to become the strongest, period. And that's all that matters to him. And Luffy does a really good job of pulling people near him that are similar in that way, that they have one goal. They have one thing they really care about, and they build a relationship with everyone else based on the fact that they're all single-minded and driven and determined and really good at what they do. And that makes it really easy to jump in, because it's not like Batman where it's like, okay, his parents died, but then there's all this other bat stuff around him with all the history and the interrelationships and all this and that and the other thing. But, like, if I tell you Luffy's dream is to become the Pirate King, you could jump in anywhere. And I can tell you Zoro's dream is to become the strongest of them all because of this. Like, you could literally describe Zoro's character in one sentence. Enough to jump in anywhere. And I think most of the characters in this comic are like that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Man, well, maybe I won't say anything because I don't want to spoil the series for anybody. But yeah, Andy's right. Everybody, and I think this was kind of a trope in anime that it comes up, anime and manga, and it doesn't come up in every show, but a lot of them, there's each character represents some trait, and their goal is to grow that trait and become the best at it. But I think One Piece takes that to the extreme and kind of really, really sticks to that. And the different characters don't really deviate too much from that path.
Yeah.
But this setting that they're in, the pirate world, kind of allows for each of these people to achieve the goal that they're looking for.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that if you define the heroes that way, as having a dream and a singular driving goal, you can also kind of describe the villains as being the opposite of that. Like, Albedo, right? The fat pirate woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she doesn't have a goal. And if she has a goal, she's not willing to work for it. She just wants everybody to tell her that she's already gotten it. Right? She doesn't really seem to have a thing that she's driving toward. And same with Axe Hand Morgan and Helmeppo. Axe Hand's just like, I want to move up through the ranks because ranks are important. But there's no goal he has at the top. He doesn't have any reason for wanting it other than wanting it. And Helmeppo is just a fucking little shithead.
Yeah.
Right? So I think as much as you can determine the heroes for having that driving goal, the villains just as much don't have it.
Well, there are some villains who, well, I won't say villains. There are antagonists in the show that are antagonistic towards Luffy and his crew because they have the same goal as Luffy. Like, the idea of becoming the king of the pirates is not something singular to Luffy. There's many other pirates who want to do
one king,
who want the same goal, and so that puts them at odds with Luffy sometimes. But they're not necessarily villains. They just clash.
Some of the villains too, like jumping ahead of it, Enel, right, David? Is a guy, he has a goal. His goal is to become God. So maybe the lesson there is don't commit the crime of hubris. But at least he has a dream and he has a goal.
Yeah.
It's just a little above him.
Well, there's one character who is a major villain, and I'm gonna use one of his aliases so it doesn't spoil anything for anybody, but there's a character called Joker, and that's not who he really is. That's an alias, and he also wants to be king of the pirates, but he is not a nice person like Luffy is. So he, even though they have the same end game, they're going about it in very different ways.
Yeah. So let's talk about Luffy a little bit as a character. In the anime, I don't think you get his backstory as immediately as you do here. I think in the anime, it starts with him busting out of the barrel that he gets into after he goes in the whirlpool.
Yeah, I think that is exactly.
It starts with that scene.
He's on Alvida's ship.
So it's really cool to get his backstory right up front here, because I love his backstory.
Yeah, I think it was actually one of the reasons it was particularly engaging. Like, I think if I had just seen some random dude who was stretchy be like, "I want to be the pirate king," I might not have.
It's like, yeah, it's Pirate Reed Richards.
Yeah, like, seriously, it's kind of like, okay, well, now what? Why do I care? But it was really sweet seeing him look up to red-haired Shanks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, like, part of the reason he has this dream is, like, because someone he really respects, you know, is a pirate. And it just was a really good way to build character early on, which I think in anime, because people tend to show up more as tropes, is really important.
Yeah, and I like that moment when you see Shanks has lost his arm. Because I think up until then, a lot of this is like, okay, this is younger person shonen. Right? This is like shonen for kids, almost. Like, oh, don't be the bully. You know, have respect. The elderly people know because of the bandits, you know, like, don't fuck around. Pirates are dangerous. Like, it's all fun and games, but there's not, like, consequence for any of it, you know? Like, this, I mean, let's be realistic. If this kid in a bar talks up to these bandits, they really are going to take him out to sea and fucking murder him. Right? Well, not out to sea, the bandits won't, but the pirates would. I mean, like, bandits would just kill the kid or whatever, you know? Like, it would be more violent than this in the real world. So you kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to the end, and then it's fucking Shanks' arm is fucking gone. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, there actually is loss here. This isn't all Lottie freaking da.
Yeah, and the show and the manga are very humorous, but there are consequences to the actions people take. Like, people die in this show. It's not like Pokemon, where they just faint, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good comparison.
Well, I mean, that's true. And you know, Pokemon is for definitely for a different audience. But there are real consequences to what happened. And, you know, that's something... Now that I think about it, that's something that we get a lot more in anime than we do in American comics. Like, American comics, there's the joke about, you know, nobody stays dead. But in anime in general, I think that's not the case, you know?
Yeah, and I think part of that is the readership originally was really different. For instance, in Western comics, I think the readership started younger and got older to the point where the average is around our age. For manga, the readership has always been more targeted towards adults, and it's considered, like, kind of more... Like, you can be a comics geek in Western culture, but I think you could just be, like, a normal not-geek person, not, like, someone who's into a subculture to, like, manga if you're Japanese.
Yeah, one of the things that blew my mind when one of my friends went to Japan, he took a picture of the subway heading into... town in Tokyo, and there were all these dudes in, like, business suits hanging out on the subway, like, going to work like mid-level executives, and half of them had Game Boys and half of them had comics. And I'm just thinking, like, that would not happen in the US.
Yeah, and I remember when I was in Japan, there were, like, manga reading rooms where you would go in and they would have volumes and volumes and volumes, like, so, like, full runs of series of manga, and you, I don't know if you pay some fee, and you get this little, like, cubby you get to chill in, and you get to just sit there and read manga.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And I don't, you couldn't, in fact, there's a ramen place here in, well, not here in San Jose, but in Mountain View, which is a suburb of San Jose,
yeah,
that has a bookshelf of manga. Awesome. So it's not something that's, like, out of the ordinary. Well, it's not a subculture, like Jen was saying. It's part of the cultural landscape, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's not subculture, it's culture.
Yeah.
Which is super awesome.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit more about Luffy as a person. Cause I didn't think about this until Alex, the guy I mentioned before that I'm rewatching this with, called Luffy a psychopath. And I really, upon reflection and upon reading this first trade again, I think he definitely is. He cares little about the safety of himself. He cares little about the safety of others. He cares little about the feelings of others. He almost doesn't give a fuck about anything except for his dream. Like, we talked about how the defining part of a hero in this comic is that they have a dream and a goal and then they drive toward it and whatever else doesn't really matter. But I think Luffy takes that to the extreme, right? Like, okay, I have right in front of me the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And the definition for psychopathy says that you have to meet one of three criteria of seven, all right? And he meets one, two, three... four of them. He meets four of the seven, and you only need three. He is certifiably a psychopath.
So give us the rundown here.
Failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behaviors as indicated by repeatedly performing acts that are grounds for arrest.
He's a pirate, okay.
He's a pirate, okay. So there's grounds for arrest. Deception, as indicated by repeatedly lying, use of aliases, or conning others for personal profit or pleasure. And that one doesn't hold, I don't think.
Well, he does say... to Zoro, I'll let you out and get your swords if you join my crew.
Yeah, but that's not There's no deception. There's he's not conning him anywhere in there. But the next one I think is a defining trait of his character. Impulsivity or failure to plan ahead.
Oh yeah.
That is a defining trait of this man's character.
And later in the series, it is something that comes to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, which is a great moment. And then number four, irritability and aggressiveness as indicated by repeated physical fights or assaults.
Yeah.
Does that hold in a violent world, though?
No, I don't. I think psychology is all in context. Like, you can't go to, like, a tribal culture and tell the oracle that they have schizophrenia and that they're diseased, right? The oracle has a function in that society. In that society, schizophrenia is normal if it's an oracle, right? Like, it's defined by abnormality. So I think in this world, his fighting isn't a result of irritability or aggressiveness. He's not going out picking these fights, per se. Like, he's not going out. He's not. Helmeppo would meet this one. Helmeppo's walking around trying to pick fights, and he's being irritable.
I feel like Luffy stands up for the underdog a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think that one fits. But the number five is reckless disregard for safety of self or others.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's three already. Consistent irresponsibility, as indicated by repeated failure to sustain consistent work behavior or honor financial obligations. That one, I don't think we get in this trade, but definitely is him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely is him. There's one series where they go and rack up this massive restaurant tab and he just leaves.
Oh.
And leaves somebody else with the bill. I think he leaves Kobe with the bill. Lack of remorse, as indicated by being indifferent to or rationalizing having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another. I don't think he does that either. But he meets four. He meets four of the seven. He is certifiably a psychopath.
That's a really excellent way to look at this. Just because if you think about it, I mean, because these characters are such tropes, my guess is that you could pick out, if not psychopathy, then some level of mental disorder for pretty much every single one of them.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting because I'm not sure we regard, like, characters in Western comics the same way. Like, I mean, certainly Deadpool, for instance, but we don't ever sit down and say, like, is Peter Parker, you know, abnormal in his psychological behavior. So that's interesting. I like that comparison a lot.
Zoro definitely has some kind of thing going on. He has to have some kind of personality disorder from the trauma of his youth. But I think, interestingly, I think Shanks is normal. So far as I can tell, I can't think of anything I would diagnose Shanks with.
Okay.
And I think Kobe is also a normal person. Until he gets inspired by Luffy to endanger his own life, at which point he has caught the crazy bug.
Fair enough.
But that was a good moment for Kobe when he just decides, when he says, no, Luffy, you have to repeat after me. Alvida of all of, or what is it? I don't know. I don't even know how the beginning of it starts, but it starts with the irreverent half of the phrase and then ends with the rudest bitch. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to get your ass kicked, but yeah.
She deserved it so hard, too. Yes. That was...
With her giant fucking club covered in spikes. See, but I look at her and then I think, who joins her crew? Right? Like, some of those people must have signed up for it, right?
You think?
Well, there's so many henchmen, you know. The henchmen have to work for someone.
Yeah.
But why her? At least the Marines? Like, with them, you could tell they hated Axe Hand Morgan, and they were, like, really happy when he was dead, and he ruled over them with, like, terror. So that makes sense, but I feel like this one crazy lady isn't necessarily going to be able to, like, I don't know, physically terrorize all these dudes. But, yeah, you're right, that's what henching is.
Yeah, they're probably just paying their dues, going around meeting people until they can get moved to a better group.
Let's talk about Morgan.
Okay.
Like, his character design was really bizarre. And I just can't get over how creepy he looks.
Like, yeah. with the barren underbite jaw and the axe hand, the literal axe hand Morgan.
Well, his, yeah, like whole forearm is an axe.
And it sticks past the elbow. That's the worst part by far.
And the part that sticks past the elbow is covered in skin.
Yep.
So he has... But, like, how would that work? Wouldn't the wood rot from the fleshy bits inside of you?
Wouldn't the fleshy bits rot from rejecting the wood? I just... Everything about that's really nasty. Like, I can't handle his arm. It's terrible.
But is it scary or is it not believable? Because this is the thing that I keep happening. Whenever there's a new arc and there's a new devil fruit power that comes up or some new ridiculous thing, I invariably will message David on AIM and say, I don't know if I can handle this arc. This is too ridiculous. And then he says...
You just have to... This is just... It's just the way this world is, okay? There's a... Okay, so Luffy eats the gum fruit and he becomes... made of rubber. He's not stretchy like Mr. Fantastic. He is actually made of rubber.
Yes.
And the physical properties of rubber apply to him.
Which is eventually why bullish things don't work.
And he's immune to electricity. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. There's a character later in the show who uses, I think he has lightning.
Yeah.
He ate a lightning fruit and he can't hurt Luffy with the lightning.
Which is kind of cool.
But there's a character who is a dog and a bazooka, okay? Okay?
Because they gave the bazooka the dog fruit.
Wait. Yes,
the bazooka ate the dog fruit.
Wait, like a bazooka? Like a blam bazooka type?
Yes, like a rocket
launcher. Yeah. How does a rocket eat a fruit? Do you load it in? Or
I don't know the details, but it looks like a wiener dog, except it's a bazooka.
Yeah, and like its arms and legs and head go back inside the gun, and then it can shoot, like, I think it shoots baseballs in the episode. It shoots baseballs, and then it's partnered up with a baseball-themed character.
What?
Right, so this is what happens. I will text David after I watch these things, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then I remember the first time he did it, he says, Andy, this is a show about magical pirates. Shut the fuck up. None of it has to make sense. And I think as soon as you accept the fact that none of the powers in this have to make sense, it's beautiful. Because I think this comic, and like the idea of eating a devil fruit and getting a power, to me is no different than being a mutant in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people like who've eaten, I think probably like 35% of the population in this world has eaten a devil fruit.
Well, okay. That's sample bias too, because most of the show happens in the Grand Line, which is where all the pirates hang out. So I think if you're hanging out every day, like in this first trade, you see one person who's eaten a devil fruit, because they're not in the Grand Line. They're just kind of out hanging out where most of the commoners are. So, like, out here, it's kind of rare. But I think in the Grand Line, yeah, at least a third of them.
Yeah, so, like, pirates and the Navy, probably, like, 35%. Half of Luffy's crew, the crew that currently exists, I think 4 of the 8 are Devil Fruit users. They've eaten, 4 of them have eaten a Devil Fruit.
And in here, okay. we get one. So
right? Is it, so let me...
I don't know. I would have to think and count. But, yeah. Like, Axan Morgan is not... I don't know, but Axan Morgan has not eaten a devil fruit. He's literally just stuck an axe onto the end of his arm, which is even more stupid for his part.
Yeah, it's four.
He should just go get, like, the axe fruit if he really fucking wants to gain more power that way.
Well, also, this is also what's completely insane about the devil fruit. There is only one piece of fruit for each power.
Yeah, so nobody else in the world will ever be a rubber man like Luffy. Which is kind of cool, because that makes it easy to... You never have to explain why there isn't another. You know, and it also makes it more interesting from a writing and reading perspective. Like, I hate when I read X-Men and it's like, oh, so now there's X-23 and Wolverine and Sabretooth, who's kind of like Wolverine but hairier, and Lady Deathstrike, and they're all kind of like the same, but they're all mutants. And so it's like it gets rid of that kind of boredom in it, I think. I don't know. I don't like the idea of mutants for some reason, but I like the idea of devil fruit.
Yeah, and there's like different types of devil fruit. And like
it's hard to not gush about this show.
Yeah. No, I'm enjoying this.
So one of the types of fruit is called Zoan type. And those are fruits that give animal-like properties. So usually it means the person who eats it can take on the properties of whatever animal the fruit is.
So if there's one cheetah fruit.
Yeah, but there's one character in the show who ate the... He's a reindeer who ate the human fruit.
Oh, God.
So he's a reindeer who now has human properties.
Don't you say, oh, God, that's one of my favorite characters.
No, that wasn't a bad oh, God. That was a, I'm going to need to watch this show, oh, God, and I don't know where I'm going to find the time.
Yes! There's another character who ate a giraffe fruit, okay? Giraffe. There's a guy who ate the giraffe fruit. And so that seems, so he's a person who can turn into a giraffe. That seems completely retarded, right?
No, I like that.
But he is a badass. He's a complete badass, and he turns into a giraffe.
If only he had more time to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
He only had like 3 episodes to learn how to use it.
So, the reindeer that takes on human properties, is this like a very smart reindeer? Or like what constitutes a human property in this case?
Change into a human-ish form, can learn to speak, can walk like a human, can almost pass as humanish, not really.
Everyone thinks
he's a raccoon.
There's an ongoing joke in the show where they think he's a tanuki,
even though he's young to middle aged in reindeer years, in human years he's really young. So when he changes into a human, he's like child size.
But
I mean, has the ability to learn and all of these other things just like a human would, except is a reindeer.
He's like age wise, he's probably like teenager, or but he looks like a young child. But he's also a professional. He has a profession.
Yeah.
In the show.
What's his profession?
He's a doctor.
Oh my god.
So, yes, there is capacity for quite a bit of intelligence there. But, like, okay, so that's one. The other one is Paramecia,
which is... Paramecia. That's what Luffy is.
So that's just the kind of catch-all for anything that's not Zoan or...
Logia.
Logia is like an element. So, yeah, like, so, lightning is Logia. Light is Logia. Fire.
Lava. There's lava. Fire, lava, smoke, gas... There's a distinction between smoke and gas.
Yes. So, like, those are considered the highest form. Because you actually, like, the lightning one, the guy actually can become lightning. Right? Oh. So, like, he can move as fast as lightning. He can hit as hard as lightning could. Like, so that, in terms of, okay, Luffy is kind of his one, like, foible. But take, like, the guy who's eating the light fruit. He's literally light. Luffy can never be as fast as him.
Yeah, he can move at the speed of light.
Cool. And he shoots fucking lasers because it's light.
And so these guys sound like complete badasses, and they are. Yeah. But there are characters in the show who have not eaten devil fruit that can go toe to toe with some of these characters because they're just complete badasses.
Well, because we talked about earlier how it's kind of a defining characteristic of manga. That the main character and the main character's friends have drive, have a dream, have something that they're working to, that sort of ambition, that want, the kind of want, the willpower, right? And we mentioned it before that One Piece seems to take this to the extreme with just Zoro and Luffy in this arc, but it literally does take it to the extreme. If you have enough willpower, if you have enough fortitude of mind, and you have enough desire and strength of will, you can kind of funnel that into being its own power, and that's how you fight people with devil's fruit. is you just simply want it more than they do, kind of. In the show, they turn into a mechanic. They call it haki, all this other kind of thing. But yeah. That's more or less what it boils down to, is if you have enough willpower, if you want your dream fucking bad enough, you can beat people with fucking powers, which is kind of neat.
People who turn into smoke or gas, if you have enough willpower, you have the ability to punch them. Like, that's how far the show takes it. And in the context of the show, it makes sense. You okay. just come to accept it.
But yeah, this comic.
Yeah, sorry.
I knew this was going to happen the moment I started reading this. I was like, we're not going to be able to keep the discussion just to this comic.
You know, I think that's okay, though, because, I mean, we're talking... When we talk about, like, Superman, it won't be a discussion about all the other Superman comics, because how could it be? But this makes sense, because we're talking about one continuous story. So anything we say here, I will count as applicable.
Yeah, all right. Working it in.
All right, yeah. So we talked about Luffy and Morgan a little bit. Let's talk about Zoro. Let's talk about Zoro now. So Zoro, as we see, he is known as Pirate Hunter Zoro because he's a bounty hunter who captures pirates. And he eventually joins Luffy's crew, right? So what do you guys think of, well, Jen, what do you think of Zoro from what you've seen so far here?
So there were expletives that came out of my mouth when I saw him wielding his three swords, just because I was like, what even? I really like that. It's just so redonkulous. Like, it's beyond all logic and sense. And I don't know, I think that's actually one of the moments where this comic went from being, like, just silly to being, like, majorly over the top, which I like that. So, he's awesome. He's actually my favorite character in these 8 issues that we've read so far.
Cool.
And I'm glad that he is staying on, because I would like to see more of him if I continue reading or start watching this. So, I don't know. He just seems to have, like, more drive without it being such a... Like, when Luffy has drive, he's, like, kind of naive, and that's nice and all, but there's something more badass about Zoro, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about how ridiculous it is, and I do love the over-the-top ridiculousness, but I like that Oda goes out of his way to rationalize it as best you can. Because you get the kind of abbreviated story of his origin, more or less, with the girl, I can't remember her name, where she says, even with two swords, you can't beat me, right? And then he gets her sword, and he's like, well, I've already got my two. Where am I going to put this third sword? Right? Like, it's fucking stupid. Because anybody would just steal one of the two and use that one. They wouldn't fucking put it in their mouth. Right? But he still went out of the way to rationalize it and build it into the story and try to make it have some kind of tangible sense that really just shouldn't exist, but fuck it, let's put it in there. I love that.
I feel like that story was actually kind of elevated by the goofy way in which she died.
Yeah, fell downstairs.
Like, yeah, right after that, you know, they have this epic promise, and I was thinking, like, oh, his goal will be to beat her, and it's going to be a badass fight later on in the series, but nope, she fell down a flight of stairs. Which, yeah, that can be deadly, but really?
Well, actually, you know, I don't remember how it comes up in the anime, but you could hold out hope. Like, you know, like maybe somebody pushed her down a flight of stairs. That's like, that's the excuse for every, like, abuse victim on television show and stuff, you know?
Walked into a doorknob.
I guess I guess if you really wanted to, you could hold out hope. I don't remember if it's more definitive in the show, but
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I know it's like the backstory for him covers like 2 episodes in the show, whereas here it covers like 2 pages.
Yeah, and well, it really, beyond using the three swords, it actually really informs Zoro's character as ongoing. even 600 episodes in, this part of his childhood really is a defining characteristic of him.
Yeah, because there's another character who looks kind of like this girl did, and it fucks with his head. And it's great that 500 episodes later, that's still, like, it's holding on. I like that. And they didn't forget. It's kind of cool. But my favorite part about Zorro in this is the kind of the reveal. Because, what is it? They're, like, looking over the fence, and you don't see him yet. And I think Kobe says, like, oh, look at his aura. It's like, oh, of course, this is a manga. But then you cut to him, and it's not him standing there looking badass in any way. He's fucking strung up on a cross. Like, dying. It's like, oh, that is a very intimidating aura. You're about to die.
Wait, does he really say aura?
I think he says aura. Well, in my translation, he does. I got some fan sub.
Oh my god, that's totally foreshadowing.
Oh yeah, huh? Fuck, I didn't even notice that. Jesus. Is it? Oh goddamn, I'm scrolling the wrong way. Fucking manga. Sorry, that sounded really bad.
I will say one of my biggest problems with this is I did read a fan translation, and I was reading it in Comic Rack as a 2-page spread, which Comic Rack cannot differentiate which way it should go, so it was putting them in the wrong order, so I had to read each page from right to left, but then the pages themselves went from left to right. And I think I spent like a good half hour having to reread until I realized I should just put it on one page at a time. So, to the Western reader, manga can be confusing even if you're used to it.
Okay, so here's the panel. Kobe says, it's him, it's Roronoa Zoro. That black bandana and cloth around his waist and that intimidating aura, it's Zoro.
Oh yeah, okay, so my translation, I have the Shonen Jump Viz English translation, and he says he looks so menacing instead of a...
Okay.
But, well then. Yeah, but if it really... I mean, if the Japanese translation actually uses a term like aura, then that is foreshadowing.
I don't know.
I feel like it might be.
It could be.
Mystery.
And that doesn't matter until the War of the Best. I don't think it comes up again.
Yeah, I don't think it does either for quite
Kobe
a while.
Kobe and auras. It comes... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm just getting excited by thinking about
it. I'm excited because I think Jen's going to try watching it.
I think I am.
So
I don't know when, it. But it's going to happen.
I will tell you right now. I think it's like the second or third arc when they go to Syrup Village and you meet Usopp. That kind of drags a little bit. And I think that puts a lot of people off. It put Alex off. It put me off. It's like I stopped watching it and then David convinced me to start again. And that's the second time is when I was able to watch it through. And another friend of mine, it put him off. And then I convinced no power through. Just fucking skip that arc if it's really that bad. So it kind of drags. But the one after that with Nami is really so good.
Yeah.
Stab a stab.
And there's another one towards the beginning where they go to a country called Alabasta, which is a long arc, but it's pretty action-packed.
Because it holds with what I say about every cartoon, TV show, anything. Desert arcs always suck. Any arc, any story set in a desert is the worst part of that title.
And I think I would agree with that. That's probably the weakest arc of One Piece. But it's very early in the show, and the show builds from there.
Yeah. And there's stuff that happens there that matters for later and all that and the other thing. But just for some reason, I don't know why, whenever creators take their characters into a desert, the writing turns to shit. Like Avatar The Last Airbender does that too. That arc where they go into the desert is like, oh my god. And it sucks balls until they get into the fucking library.
It's like,
this is terrible.
Agreed.
Airbass is the same. I don't even remember other ones, but they're all fucking bad. Never take... If any of you listening, or either one of you two, ever like writes a comic, gets popular, never take your characters into a desert. It's gonna suck.
Okay.
Alright, so we kind of mentioned Kobe seeing Zoro's aura. So what do you guys think of Kobe?
He's a bit of a tool.
Yes.
And I like that Luffy calls him out on it.
Yeah.
You're kind of a little bitch, aren't you?
Like, at this
point,
I'm
psychopathy.
When is he going to wash out of the Marines? That's what I need to find out, because I don't think he's going to...
Do you really want to know?
No. Okay. No. Keep it a secret. These are just my ponderings. But yeah, that's what I'm wondering, because he's clearly more cut out to be a pirate than a Marine, and he's clearly going to end up being someone's navigator. Or...
You need to watch.
You need to watch now.
Okay.
We need to convert you.
How about, now you have to watch. Just know what happens to Kobe.
Here's the deal, Jen. I will binge on Attack of the Titans if you binge on this.
But see, Andy, Attack on Titan is only 25 episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, what else? How long are they? Are they like the same, like 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
It's totally worth. You should watch it anyway, though.
Yeah, you would like that.
Can we do two for one?
Okay.
You do, because I mean, okay. Even if we do two for one, that's like 300 episodes you would get to dictate to me.
I'll tell you what.
Or at least commit you for the first 50.
I've watched Attack on Titan. I've watched Attack on Titan twice over. Did I say it again?
Sorry. No. Was that Star Fox? Did you just do blah, 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 blah. Like the frog?
It just happened.
Yes.
Do a barrel roll.
Okay, so you...
I've watched it twice over. So I'll two for one you on 50 episodes of that.
Right.
Okay, I'll watch 100 episodes of this, maybe. I can't commit to that. It's so many. Do you know how many minutes that is? That's like all the minutes. That's 100 times 25 minutes.
Wait, hold on. I gotta see what episode 100 is to see if it even put you. Okay, that puts you in the desert. Okay, if you can get to the desert, you'll be okay.
Okay.
If you can get there, then you're bought in.
Yeah, okay. I'll agree with that.
Because as much as the desert arc suck, the end is pretty good. Because the boss for the desert arc is really good.
Yeah, there's like a boss fight at the end of each arc.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'll try this out and we'll see if I'm a convert.
All right. Apparently my laughter there just woke up my wife in the other room.
Nice.
Yeah, well, that happens. So, you guys want to talk about the art?
Sure.
Sure.
I mean, this is the thing with me with manga art. I have no idea how to grade manga art. Like, I don't... Maybe because I don't read any manga, really. I just...
I would say, I mean, manga's tougher because the production schedule, I think, is a lot harder. It's not in color, but it's as many pages often, or, like... fewer pages by six than Western comics. But it's on a weekly basis. And if you're doing this every week for however many years, that's pretty amazing. So I'm willing to accept, you know, no color, kind of less detail in backgrounds and stuff. But personally, like, I judge on character design. Because to me, that's kind of like the area where I feel like people put in probably a lot more thought than when they're just drawing week to week to week. And One Piece is really, I don't know, it feels like a 90s manga. I will say that. Like, just the outfits, the straw hat, like Zoro's hair, there's something very 90s about it to me.
Yeah, okay, so you're right, the production... I was wondering, like, why, when I was reading this, I noticed so many frames were tight and close up, and there wasn't a lot of emphasis on scenery. And at first I was like, maybe it's because they don't have a solid feel for the world, or maybe you're supposed to imagine it, but I completely forgot the idea of a production schedule, so you know, you fill up most of the frame with the talking head, and then you fill in the rest of it with text. And you don't have to worry about the background. You don't have to worry about what the restaurant or the bar looks like. You don't have to worry about what most of the base looks like. You just need the one establishing shot and try to set it so everybody kind of knows. And then, like you say, focus on character design. That's why one of the most detailed pages in this trade is when you first see Zorro strung up on that cross. Like, that has some of the most detail of any page in this comic, and it's a simple image. It's just him there. It's not like it's a base or a vehicle or a ship or anything like that that takes more time to draw, but if you look at that page, there's a lot more emphasis on the quality of inking and the detail on that page versus a lot of the other ones. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I completely forgot about production schedule, and I need to remember to keep that in mind with reading manga.
Yeah, I also feel like you're more likely to meet with things that are strangely, like, drawn or disproportionate in manga. And some of that is the style. I mean, obviously, like, eyes, heads, the way children are depicted in relation to adults with just being, like, kind of compact and rounder.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think in manga you're also more likely to see things like weird perspectives that aren't quite right, and maybe it's not fair to judge as harshly because, I don't know, like maybe a good artist should always get those things right, but I always feel like there's a little more leeway than when I'm reading like a fully, you know, colored, had like four times as long to draw at Western Comic. And I might be wrong on Western Comic production schedules, and maybe they only do have a week per issue because it has to pass through so many hands. Because, I mean, the thing about manga, too, is it's, like, usually one guy doing his thing until he gets so famous he gets a studio.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. It's just really different. It's hard to establish good criteria.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think you do have to make it a lot about character design, because as I'm scrolling through it, like, when we look at Western comics, there's a lot of emphasis on not just the action and how well it's done, but also the tone and the portrayal of the scenery, kind of a thing. Like, what does this comic feel like when you pick it up, and the different style of the art. And I feel like manga art in general is more uniform than Western art is these days in terms of comics. Like, I think we get more people in Western comics differentiating from the norm. Things like Hawkeye and FF and things of that nature that kind of deviate from the sort of Jim Lee style of art, which is more the this is classical Western comic book art. I think there's more deviation there than I've seen in manga anyway. Manga tends to be much more uniform, or at least, I don't know, I'm kind of biased, because is that just the coloring that makes me say that? And the fact that there's color versus not color?
I don't think so, because, I mean, like, if you look at it, it's more like, I would argue in manga, a lot of the time, the breakdown is in genre. Because if you're reading shonen, character design is usually cleaner in terms of line work, thicker lines. I mean, for instance, take One Piece that we've read here. Luffy's eyes are two lines and a dot per eye. Yeah. Like, it's not super detailed, whereas something super classic shoujo, like Sailor Moon. And shoujo is girls' comics.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's all these lines depicting shading and how the eyelid goes and each lash and, you know, all the little, like, bits of light reflecting. So, you know, like, that's Sailor Moon is, like, very classic shoujo. This looks very, like, more classic shonen. And if you compare it to something like Naruto or DBZ, to cite, like, two very famous examples, you'll kind of see that cleanness and uniformity. And I don't know if that's something that's just, like, because it's easier to draw like that on such a tight schedule, or if it's something having to do with their publishing industry. But I do think it is more uniform. And you will notice, like, variation between artists, but there's only so much of it.
Okay.
At least that's my... I'm sure, like, we're going to get some crazy otaku emailing us for the very first time and being like, no. But that'd be cool, yeah, too. Just let us know. How wrong are we?
Yeah, I guess I just don't have a basis for comparison. The only thing that I do know is there are probably some scenes in this coming up that are really, really well drawn and really, really memorable, because there are times in the anime where they take special emphasis on the style of the art in the anime and the framing of the scene. And they take emphasis in the way that I know they're trying to pull it as directly as they can from the comic. And my favorite example is when they're on Sabaody Archipelago and Luffy throws that punch that everybody's telling him not to throw. Do you know that scene, David? In the theater? No, not in theater. I think it's an auction house theater kind of
thing. The auction house, yeah.
Yeah. Like that, in that one, that scene, the art style completely changes and it goes black and white and it pauses for just a moment. And I'm like, oh, that frame where you pause is probably like straight out of the manga. And that's kind of cool. So it's kind of neat to know that the art quality of this probably improves about the same that the quality of the anime improves in art quality substantially as well. So it's kind of neat to know that this improves too. Because in this, it's really simple, like you say. And I don't think it's just simple because of production schedule. I think it's simple because of art ability. But like, that's the thing. At this point, he's been drawing these characters for 10 years, right? Like, you draw the same guy 10 years in a row every day. You're going to get really fucking good at drawing that character. It's just going to happen. So, did you have anything to say about the art, David?
Not really. I don't think I have a good basis for comparison. I haven't read enough manga. There's a few that I've read a lot of, like Initial D, which is, I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with that. It's a racing one. But I think that's more drawn in a shoujo style, because it's a very dramatic. There's not people like punching and stuff, so the way that the characters are drawn is very detailed, so you can see like subtleties and emotion and stuff like that. So I don't have any problems with the art in this. I thought it was, you know, I feel like it's on par with the anime.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least as far as character designs go and the way the characters are shaped and things like that, you know, there's like no deviation whatsoever between the two mediums.
Yeah, in terms of like how Zoro looks or and the how two Luffy media. Looks. And, yeah. And actually, I think the art in the manga is of higher quality than the art in the anime.
Well, I think that's probably
that's a blanket
true.
Statement.
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, I don't know how manga production works as opposed to anime, but anime, they have a team of animators probably working on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And with the manga, it might just be one person. It might just be Oda.
Just drawing and writing and all.
It very often is one person, I think.
Which I gotta say is really cool. You don't see that hardly at all in Western comics, where it's one person doing the penciling and the writing. It happens sometimes, but it's pretty rare. And
I think people like Dan Jurgens will do that sometimes, right?
Yeah, and I think it's way more common in manga for it to be one person doing the art and the story.
Yeah, it gets... I've heard that it is a very grueling job.
I imagine.
Yeah, I can't even begin to like imagine how much effort it would take to do something like One Piece. I mean, maybe by now he has a production team working on it, but still, that's like... a lot of comics.
He's got to be like some kind of superstar, right? You can't have an anime go on for fucking 12 years and not be some kind of superstar over there.
I would think so.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll find out. I'll look it up on Wikipedia.
Also, just as a point of clarification, and just kind of interesting, the genre on things, like, there is another genre that's... Well, there's more genres than shoujo and shonen. There's also seinen, which is what Initial D would be. And okay. The differentiator there is, like, shoujo is girls' comics. Shonen is younger boys' comics. So that would be One Piece, DBZ. Seinen is comics for men who are, like, in their late teens and upwards. Okay. So, like, that's Initial D. That would be, like, Attack on Titan, Rurouni Kenshin, things like that. So,
is there a similar corollary for girls' comics?
I'm not sure. I actually don't read too many, so I'm not super familiar with it.
Okay.
But then, oh, and then another really big thing, which I think is actually kind of cool, but also ends up being, like, terrifying in some ways, is there's a lot of doujinshi, which is, like, professionally produced fanfic, where people will take, like, licenses and just do, like, you know, and they get published as real books. It's not like someone's weird webcomic or DeviantArt page. And some of it's, like, super serious. Some of it is really insane. Like, I recently saw Attack on Titanic, a Titanic, the major motion picture, and Attack on Titan universe crossover. Okay. Yeah, that's a thing. And it's, like, so this is how mainstream manga is. Like, when you do fan fiction, you don't do it, like, on the internet on your Zanga account in secret. You do it and get it published, and people buy it like it's the real, like, real license. So it's a really interesting thing, manga, because it's just so prevalent over there. It's nothing like Western comics.
Oh, so Andy.
Yep.
Wikipedia tells me there's something called Jose, which is manga targeted to women from the ages of 15 to 44.
Okay. Huh. So there is a corollary.
Yeah.
Okay. I figured there probably was, but, you know, it's good to have the name out there.
Yeah.
So apparently it says it portrays realistic romance as opposed to idealized romance that you would see in shoujo.
So are there any, like, popular examples of it?
The only one on here that I recognize is Honey and Clover. And I recognize that because Lucia watched the anime version of it on Netflix. But that's the only one I recognize looking at the Wikipedia page.
Okay. Hmm. All right, then. You guys ready to get down and rate One Piece?
Yeah.
All right. Jen, you go first.
Oh, man. I am excited to get into the rest of One Piece. I'm not sure how I want to rate the first 8. Like, they were interesting. I think I'm going to give them a 4. Because they were engaging, and I'm, like, excited, especially after all the things you told me. I thought that sometimes, like, the first manga is really shaky in terms of story and art, or it starts off really slow. I thought this was engaging and amusing. I like the art well enough. The character design is not my favorite, but that's personal choice. Like, there's actually nothing wrong with it. It's just a different aesthetic than what I prefer. But yeah, I'm actually pretty excited to get into this at some point, hopefully soon. So 4.
All right, David, how about you?
This is hard to try to do an unbiased rating of this.
If you have to, just do it biased, whatever.
The problem too is, like, I haven't read that much manga. With comics, it's easy for me to rate it against something else. Rating it against the mangas I have read, and thinking about the ones we read previously on the show, I remember we read Priest and Fullmetal Alchemist. I don't remember what else. Did we read anything else? I don't remember.
Detroit, yeah, it
Metal
was...
City.
Oh, Detroit Metal City. Yes. Detroit Metal City.
Yeah, that's a fucking crazy thing.
I'm going to give One Piece I'm going to give it a 4.5. No, I'm going to give it a 5. I love it too much. I'm just going to give it a 5. I gushed about it enough in the episode that I think it doesn't bear repeating. But the story, the universe, like, the setting of One Piece is just – it's lighthearted, which makes it fun and easy to digest. But – at the same time, it's got good action and funny characters. It's just got, like, a mix of it's a good mix of everything I want out of a intellectual property. So, you know, it doesn't have everything. There's no spaceships or anything like that, but it's pretty great.
Yeah.
So I can definitely, it's a 5 for me. I recommend the anime to everybody, and if somebody wanted to read a manga, I'd say go read One Piece. So
you know, You say there's no spaceships, but there is the time that they take their ship up into the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah. It's not really a space. I mean, they're in the atmosphere still.
Almost. They take them to like another plane of existence, almost.
No, it's just it's in the sky. Sky.
Don't they actually take it to another plane of existence?
No, it's just in the sky.
No, not the sky part, but there's another arc where they like go through some portal.
Oh, the one where there's yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I think they do actually go to another plane of existence.
That was like a little side arc.
Yeah.
That was I
think it was just before Thriller Bark.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking before or after, and I couldn't think of Thriller Bark. I kept thinking Gecko Moria, who's the bad guy from that arc, but yeah.
Gecko Moria. I love the names. So, if I were going to rate what I know this will become, then I would give it a 5. But I think rating just this trade, I want to give it a 3.5, which is the lowest of the three of us, but it's still a full point above an average reading experience. So this is still a good reading experience. I just think the best parts of this comic, even the first trade, are when it's completely fucking ridiculous. That's when it's the best. And there's not enough of that in this. Like, Axe Hand Morgan, or I think it's Axe Arm Morgan in my translation, is completely fucking ridiculous. And that's what makes him a cool villain. And Helmeppo is not ridiculous. Helmeppo is just annoying. And it's like, yeah, this guy deserves to get his ass kicked, and I understand him needing to deserve it and all that, but he's just annoying. Axe Hand Morgan's actually cool as a villain. And, like, Zoro's kind of neat, and yeah, whatever, okay, fine. But it's when he puts that third sword in his mouth that you're like, yes. Yeah, now I'm down with this. And so it's like, as much as I enjoy reading this first manga trade, I guess we'll call it a trade, volume, it doesn't get crazy enough. Because it gets at its best when it gets crazy, and it's not crazy yet. And I think one or two more volumes, it starts to get crazier, and then you're like, all right, now I'm fucking down for this. This is good. But I think just this one, it's not crazy enough yet. But that's probably me voting it down just because I know it gets better. And voting this down because I know the crazy is good. And so I know that there's not enough crazy in this. So even biasing it downwards is still not objective. Bottom line, if you enjoyed reading this, you should go read more of it. Because it gets better and better and better and better and better, and you will never be able to stop reading or stop watching. So speaking of never being able to stop reading, next week we're going to read Ranma 1/2. Ranma? Ranma 1/2. And that was written by Rumiko Takahashi. Oh, I got that one right. We're going to read the Japanese... A translation of the Okay, so this is the thing. Ranma 1/2 is collected in Japanese volumes, which have been fan translated, and English volumes. And the Japanese volumes, the first volume is the first 8 issues, and the English volume is the first 14. I don't know why they did it that way. Maybe they figured 8 wasn't big enough of a, or like thick enough of a thing to sell in the US, so they made it 14 and charged more. I don't know. But we just read the first 8. So you can pick up the English one on the shelves probably, but we're not going to read all of that. And there's tons of apps. Just if you go on iOS or the Play Store and look up Manga Reader, you'll be able to download a reader from which you can legally download the individual chapters for this. So we're just going to read the first 8. And it has no subtitle, like One Piece was Romance Done, but it doesn't have it. So that's next week. If you want to find out what we have coming up after that, and I think we've actually got like 3 arcs in a row planned out from here on out. So if you want to know all of that stuff, you just go to our website, www.atomicpowersupercast.com. If you want to have a say in what we read coming up, because we listen to listener requests and we read them like as soon as we can fit them in a schedule. So if you have something you want us to read, send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, subscribe to us on all the social medias, the facebook.com/absupercast, twitter.com/absupercast, and absupercast.tumblr.com, and I have to confess, Tumblr is my favorite. So follow us there, but follow us on all of them. Why not? Show the love. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.